50 million kids who participated in the school lunch program. Saving Energy in Arkansas is giving the state money to spend in its economic sector. Stephanie Carson reports today industry experts will join local and state leaders at the Arkansas Energy Performance Contracting Summit taking place in Little Rock.
The AEPC program has saved public entities in the state more than $120 million since 2014 and enables municipalities, universities, and state agencies to improve energy efficiency with no upfront cost. Katie Niebaum with the Arkansas Advanced Energy Association says tomorrow's summit is expected to generate additional projects in future years.
It's really been a success story here in Arkansas that is creating jobs, saving taxpayer dollars, and conserving energy.
According to the Arkansas Advanced Energy Foundation, nearly 700 companies employing 16,000 Arkansans are employed in the advanced energy economy, which aims to reduce the energy requirement needed to sustain the same level of service. The effort is made possible by the 2013 Guaranteed Energy Cost Savings Act that allows public entities to pursue energy performance contracts that will maximize the energy used by the state.
And finally, the population in rural counties in states like South Dakota continues to decline, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. But Ross Brown reports some rural towns are finding ways to boost resilience and keep young people from moving to larger cities.
Jessica Schad with South Dakota State University studies rural population patterns and says rural communities are not homogenous. According to her research, the most resilient communities are those with the lowest income disparity and those with employers who put profits back into the community by investing in their schools or sports teams.
That has a really important role to play in making it feel like it's a good place for people to live and that it's still a place with a high quality of life.
U.S. Census Bureau data showed more than 160 South Dakota rural communities had either flat or declining populations between 2010 and 2017. I'm Roz Brown.
Schad notes that declining rural populations also affect politics, noting that Republican votes for President Trump were highest in places undergoing the most significant economic transitions. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for Newsom and Cruiser with Public News Service. We're member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Your Napa Valley News is brought to you by Computer Engineering Group. They can fix your broken screen on your iPhone or Samsung. CEG also repairs Apple and PCs in-store or at your home. They even provide IT services for your business. Call 833-CEG-9701.
Here is Janice Clifton from Abbey Carpets.
I started the business 29 years ago. I purchased it from one of my clients. All this time, we've been in the same location right behind Walmart. I have a great group of people working for me. They are all the sales staff are non-commissioned. Many of them have been with me 25 years and more, so we have a good group. We're kind of like family because we've been together so long. We do very small jobs up to very large commercial jobs to custom building. Right now, our most asked for products are ceramic tile, stone, and hardwood.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play because it's always more fun to be active.
There's mountain biking, boating and fishing, mountain climbing and spelunking. Let's get started.
Get ready to take the Maya and Miguel Challenge.
Let's see.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. We Activo. You can also check out healthy recipes to try with your family, play cool games, and get free downloads. So come hang out with Maya, Miguel, and the whole gang.
Go!
Remember, whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. And don't forget, eat healthy to be your best. Maya and Miguel will show you how at letsmove.gov. That's letsmove.gov. A message from the Ag Council and the Department of Health and Human Services.
Wherever you go, just tell your smart speaker to play KVON, the voice of Napa Valley.
And welcome back. Our time now is 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to 1440 KVON. We've been keeping an eye on the market's particular interest today because of the Dow futures telling us the market would be off about 350 points at the open, and it was, and it still is. In fact, right now, it's 349 is the red number in front of us for the Dow. This is all due to the ratcheting up of the China trade war topic, more tariffs that were talked about yesterday. So Dow off 349 at the moment. S&P is off 21, and the Nasdaq's off 78. That's in the range of 0.8 to 1.5 percentage points, the decline so far this morning. In the traffic page here for today, we picked up an accident a few minutes ago. It's about 20 minutes ago, reported at 7500 Knoxville Road at the Pope Creek Bridge pullout. Some kind of collision has occurred there. That may be a one-car situation. And that's all we have working in the North Bay right now. Nothing of problematic nature in Sonoma County, and nothing in Solano County as well. And lastly, a look at weather tells us that high today should be about 85 or so, and the same is true for tomorrow. We still may see some windy conditions all the way through Thursday, but as the weather warms up, those winds will probably diminish. We get into Friday and Saturday, and we're into the mid-90s, it appears, for the weekend forecast, and then cooling down a little again the first of next week. Right now, overcast and 55 degrees. You're up to date on KVON. Time now to turn our attention to our first of a series of candidate profiles. We've finished up with the June primary, and next up is the November election, and that's when possibly six names will be on the ballot for the city of Napa, or even more, conceivably, for the city of Napa's open council seats, of which there will be two. Joining us in our first profile is the incumbent, the only incumbent running in the current upcoming election, and that's Peter Mott. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much, Barry. Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming in. We've got a unique situation, one incumbent, the other's challengers, different starting out to the interview because you have a track record to talk about as a councilman for now. How many years?
12 years.
Time flies, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so what do you hang your hat on, 12 years working on the city council?
Yeah, I'm proud of what I've done over the last 12 years. When I first got on the council, in 2006, we were right just coming into the recession, and our very first closed session after our very first council meeting was to go in the back and talk about whether we were cutting positions and what programs we were going to cut, and how we were going to get through that kind of financial situation back in 2006. And so from that point moving forward, and I came on the council when the new city manager, Mike Parnes, came on exact same time in 2006. You know, moving forward from that situation, I really ran on a ticket back then of a financial background, a small business background, the ability to kind of look at both the small businesses in our town as well as the neighborhoods. I had kids in public school, and so we went from a point back then where it was a very challenging financially for the city to one now where our budget is extremely good, that we have fully funded reserves, and we're certainly in a financial position now to withstand not only the natural disasters that seem to happen every other year, but also any kind of downturn in the economy we might see that would impact, you know, our community. So that, along with, you know, some of the programs we've been able to implement, like the repaving programs that have really moved. There's a indicator called PCI, which is Pavement Condition Index, that the Bay Area looks at. And our Pavement Condition Index went from 56 originally, which is one of the worst in the Bay Area, up to over 70 now and still moving forward. So getting our local streets and roads, that was always probably the number one issue for our residents, getting those really up to par. And now after our new transportation measure passed, where we're going to start being able to work on actually some of our our larger streets, our collector streets, and our major streets in the city as well, because the other funding was only for neighborhood streets. So I think in the next 4 to 8 years, you're going to really see a giant difference in terms of almost every road in the city of Napa is going to be going to have new pavement on it, and that's going to be exciting. So those are the programs, really, is getting the city on this financial footing, and then taking care of neighborhoods. You know, there's always a balance about trying to figure out how to make the community fiscally in a good place, and balance that against the needs of residents and the desires of residents for a great place to live.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're getting at, if I'm reading it right, to get the city fiscally in a good place has meant a greater reliance on tourism revenue.
That's right.
And particularly hotel tax. And talk a little bit about that. We've seen the transient occupancy tax or the room tax rise to the point where it's surpassed other
sales
sources
tax,
of revenue.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really been a change over the last 10 years where sales tax, and just to get some background, you know, really communities only have three ways to raise revenue, and that is property tax, which is still our number one revenue source, sales tax, and then if they're fortunate, and I always say we're fortunate here to have TOT. So having the ability to have people that want to come visit your community does two things. It increases our bed tax, our TOT tax, which we're now, you're going to see a measure on the ballot coming up in November. I hope we're looking at, we'll be addressing it today at our city council meeting, to set aside 1% of that additional 1% that tourists will pay for to go strictly to affordable housing, because that's really a big issue for us. But again, back to this ability to raise money. So you see communities like Vallejo, and I think everybody's very familiar with the fact that Vallejo had a civic bankruptcy, because they couldn't, and they were browning out fire stations, they were letting off police officers, because they didn't have the ability to raise enough revenue, their property tax went down, and they didn't have any strong sales tax, and of course they didn't have a lot of TOT tax. So that's why if you go to different communities, you'll see big auto malls in like Dixon. You're like, why does Dixon have all these car dealerships? Well, it's because you know, car sales are a big sales tax generator. Vacaville's really relied on sales tax with their outlet mall, and so that's their big. You know, so usually it's either big box stores or a lot of car dealers is your way to really generate your sales tax. And again, here we've been fortunate enough to be able to have some balance with our sales tax. And again, sales tax also comes from restaurant sales. So restaurant sales for us is a big chunk of our sales tax. So we're not, you know, whether it'd be nice, some people would love to have some sort of big department store here, maybe in terms of not a Big Five, but a Best Buy or mm-hmm. something I've heard people mm-hmm. mention before. You know, most of those, we're a small community, it'd be tough for us to kind of get that. So, it's a balance, like you said. I recognize that, you know, tourism is an important part of our economy. But the trick to that is to do it well. Lately, there's been, certainly I've been talking about and trying to get the community more focused on the fact that we need to really plan about where our hotels go and what type of hotels we want as we move farther down the line. We just completed a study that shows there's some capacity, but whether or not just because there's capacity doesn't necessarily mean we should be building out to every place that we might think a hotel should go. So I think it's really important that we look at the city as a whole, start really talking about as we do grow and if we do bring in additional hotels, why and where they should go.
Mm-hmm. There was conversation and on the show, Sean Scully was on with me a few weeks back before the June primary, and we sort of agreed that, and we're not the only people, I'm sure, to think this, but that Measure C countywide was a sort of proxy vote on the growth of the wine industry, on the growth of wineries and vineyards, and to a degree on tourism. And the fact that it was so close, you know, you got about half of the county who was feeling like, you know, Measure C was the thing to do, and if, in fact, they were thinking about the bigger picture and tourism in general and hospitality, that's worrisome, you know, if it's 50-50 split. If 50% of people are not happy with the direction things are going, which, again, this is speculation. I don't have any facts to back that up, right? But leads to the question, how do you know with something like another 500 hotel rooms or another 1,000 hotel rooms if that's the tipping point? You know, how do you know in advance?
Well, we do a couple things. One of the things we do every year is we do a survey, and we spend a fair bit of money to do a community survey. We do it both online and through a direct calling, 500 people plus or minus, to really get a good sense of where the community is and how people feel about their community. And we're certainly seeing a response that we didn't see as much before. So the biggest thing we saw, and we get it generally in February when we do our retreat, and our planning retreat, is that for the first time in, I think probably in the last, in my whole time I've been on the council in the last 12 years, as far as I can remember, now probably not the whole 12 years. Again, the very beginning it was pretty tough, but in the last, certainly the last 8 years, for the first time the community thinks we're headed in the wrong direction, and just purely that thing. So below, people are unsure of where we're going and what we're doing. And so some of that we can attest to being this is a national thing and not necessarily a community thing. Some people certainly feel that way. But I certainly got from that and brought up to the council that, hey, people are starting to feel like this doesn't feel like their town, that their challenges here are really impacting their how they feel about their community. For example, and the biggest things I truly believe are the two things that really rise to the surface: traffic, which is we all know is getting worse and worse and worse, certainly getting in and out of town. And then secondly is housing. And actually, housing is the number one thing we saw in our survey this year. For the first time, truly in 12 years, housing rose above streets and roads. So potholes, streets and roads for 11 straight years was the winner of the survey for things people...
Biggest concern. Yeah.
This year it's housing. And our cost of housing has gone up so much. We have a lot of jobs out there. And it's just gotten to be... We're not building enough houses. And of course, that's a challenge in itself. We only have so much land. We've always supported the RUL. We're ag's an important part of our community. And so... housing for us and the ability for people to have their kids live here. I have two daughters, 20 and 18. They would, I'm sure at least one of them would love to live here sometime in the future. And her ability to buy a house on her own is going to be really challenged when, you know, the lowest price house is $450,000 now. You know, any kind of three bedroom house is $550,000, $650,000. So, I get that as a council member, and we're certainly looking at as a council and that, hey, what are we doing? It's funny, when we were off the air, I asked about this property, if this station moves, because I'm thinking, oh, apartments right in here, that'd be great. You know, we're always looking now at that. Where are we putting housing? The HHS site from the county, we're looking at now for some higher density housing. We're certainly looking at density numbers as like, you know, how can you put more housing in somewhere but do it well? So I think you're going to see that more and more, is that discussion about and housing and traffic. But I truly believe that's the message we're getting back from the community is, yeah, you know, if you live here and you live up in Alta Heights and been there 15 years in a house and you walk down to Oxbow, that's all great. But for a lot of the people live here who are renting and are really struggling to make ends meet because rents are up as well, you know, it's a different feel. So,
yeah, rents up and occupancy very, very low, and it's a difficult market for everybody out there.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, these, you know, to get apartments approved and move forward is, you know, sometimes it's a 2-3-4 year process. So we can't turn these things on a dime because it takes time to get land and to get it entitled and to get it then, you know, construction documents and loans and get it built. It just takes time to do that. You're going to see some on Gasser's property, those new units come online in the next couple of years. But again, that's a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, with housing being the concern that it is, the council has taken some steps with the accessory dwelling unit decision. Talk about that for a second, and then the follow-up is what else can be done?
Yeah, we really worked hard for a long time and actually came in up with the program before the state actually came in with a sort of a statewide program that allows effectively accessory dwelling units, you know, second dwelling units, which can be built up to 1,200 square feet. Sounds like, originally we were 50% the size of a house, and the state came in and said, nope, 1,200 square feet. So you can put a pretty good size unit.
That's a big unit.
Yeah. We reduced setbacks.
The house I used to have right over here in the old Coventry Manor,
yeah,
those were 1,200 square foot homes when they were built.
When they were built, right. So imagine, you know, obviously there's you still have to have some setbacks and some that dictate how big a lot. If you have a 6,000 square foot lot, pretty hard to do something like that. But we're really happy with the ADU program so far. We have, I believe, about 73. We've already had a couple finished, and we have about 73 people in the pipeline that are in the process of either building or getting their permits. So that's been a great program, we think. You know, the one caveat, it'd be nice to see a few more of them in the affordable level. They're not certainly required to be affordable. And so a lot of people are building them as regular priced units, but they're still adding to the housing stock. And so that's an important part of it. The other big thing and the bigger change I think we've done over the last 4 or 5 years even is that rather than, as we work with new housing developers, rather than say, hey, you're building 80 units, you need to build 8 affordable units on site, we've really been trying to package some of their money together, mostly in lieu fees, where they can pay a fee instead, which is the law. They don't have to build on site. And we're taking those and building more rentals instead of more housing stock. And the reason for that is just the need is so great. I mean, we actually closed our Section 8 list because it was taking people 5 years to get through the list to get into a property, and their lives were changing by that time. And so that need for housing stock is so significant that we've really moved more towards a model of rental stock for that median, low, and very low need to be filled. And so I think that's an important one because we have just such a great need, particularly as, many people talk about this as we talk with the lodging industry about housing their staff and their people. You know, how do we tie those two things in? And we're doing a little bit of that with this 1% bump on the TOT that we're looking at for November, is that that's not a highly paid, it's just not highly paid jobs. And so to try to house those people, really, we're trying to do more with this rental stock.
Mm-hmm. So the city moving into a new phase of actually owning units. Do you see that happening?
You know, that's a possibility. I've been studying a lot down in Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara's got a really interesting program with their housing department down there, which both manages units like we do here with affordable units where, you know, they're in for a 30-year or 20-year of locked into affordability for low and very low. But they also own a number of units down there. I think that I read they manage or own 3,000 units in Santa Barbara. So imagine if we had 3,000 units in the city of Napa or 2,000 units that we either owned or were managing. Again, this if we can get this measure passed where we're adding 1% to the TOT, so it would move to 13%, we would bring, just in the city, we'd be bringing in annually right now $2.1 million a year that we're going to put towards housing. It's absolutely dedicated to housing, can't go to anything else. It doesn't go in the general fund. You can't go to transportation. It has to go to housing. So if we could take that money, and that would grow as you know, room rates go up and as TOT grows, and maybe we buy some housing stock, or maybe we do, I was looking at programs that were rental assistance programs that we may look at for employees that live here. You know, Mark Luce, when he was on the Board of Supervisors, has worked very hard to do a work proximity program. Mm-hmm. We'd like to take that and build on that. So we really would like to house our local workers and figure out how to do that, you know, more so than, hey, we're housing people that might love living here and work in Oakland or San Francisco. That's all great. But what we really need to do is do our workforce housing.
Yeah. We're talking with Peter Mott, who is candidate once again for the Napa City Council coming up in the November election. He has 12 years of experience on the council to date. Before we take a break, while we're on the subject of housing, Napa Oaks is on your council agenda for tonight.
It is.
For the third time. That it's come before the
council,
I think.
It goes back almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's been around. It's getting modified each time. It comes back in a different format. Are you willing to say how you're going to vote on that tonight?
Well, I never really, I think it's always important to get public input, and that's what the purpose of an open council meeting is, and to get the input from both our staff and from the developer. That being said, I'll tell you what the biggest challenge to me on this project is, and that it takes a general plan amendment to approve this project. And so the general plan for me is really the constitution of the city. It's really what I can say to people, hey, if you're going to buy a house or build a house, or you're concerned that, you know, you're moving somewhere, you know, go look at the general plan, because that's going to tell you really over the next 20 years, unless there's a significant reason to change it, that's going to tell you what it's going to be like around your property. And so I'm a real, you know, I guess I'm a kind of a constitutionalist that way, and that I'm a real believer in our general plan. Our general plan, we've started already. We actually had our first meeting, but our general plan is every 20 years. It's a long time. That's a long document. It gets updated in the middle. But we spend a great deal of money and a great deal of time doing the general plan. That starts literally right now. And so to do a general plan amendment that would so that basically means changing the general plan, the council changing the general plan for a project like this, of this sort of significance in terms of the environmental, in terms of the risk of fire, where it is on the city edge. I think that's a real challenging thing to do when we're getting to a process where we're involving the entire public and we're involving people, and that's what city planning is. We're asking people to be involved in the planning of your community. We're going to have a lot of meetings and a lot of planning sessions, and so that's a struggle for me right now at this point in time before I get to this meeting and really get all the information, is to say, I don't see why we would do this kind of plan change for this significant of a project right when we're starting a 20-year general plan.
Again, Peter Mott, our guest, a candidate profile, our first of a series, as we'll eventually welcome all the candidates for Napa City Council here on the show. Time for a break at 8:30. Let's check some local news items.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some news stories we are following in Napa and the North Bay. Santa Rosa officials are asking for the public's help as they look for the person who set 13 fires Saturday night in a two-hour span. They were set on the west side of the city, many along Santa Rosa Creek. More stories to be told. Local author Joseph Tomlinson has a novel on his experiences firefighting in California. Tomlinson, who now volunteers with Napa Sheriff Search and Rescue, reflected on the fight here against October's wildfires.
You know, it was kind of crazy for myself. We had the command post set up at Vichy Elementary. We started to evacuate some people, and there was a pause because they felt that the location was in danger. And so we actually got the order to relocate, and we ended up relocating to Silverado Middle School. But there was an email from next door, you know, the little local thing, and there was a message, and it said that they were evacuating Hidden Hills and that there was a fire on Partrick Road. And we live a block off of Partrick. And the radios, there were fires breaking up all over the place. And, you know, I told the IC that, you know, hey, I need to go check on my family. And so
Tomlinson's book is called Triangle of Fire. And a new climate report says high tides will threaten California homes. The report issued by the Union of Concerned Scientists based in Oakland says many coastal properties may be flooded by 2045. And Marin County is at the greatest risk. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news.
St. Helena A&W Root Beer is currently looking for enthusiastic, friendly people who would like to join their team in serving delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner while providing great customer service. $15 per hour full-time, start immediately. Apply at the A&W, 501 Main Street, St. Helena. Applications available at awrestaurants.com. And whether you are applying for that great next job or just thirsty, order one of their famous A&W Root Beer floats for only $1.99.
In California, dealing with crazy driving situations isn't a choice, especially the ones around you that you can't see, like the pickup truck that's trying to pass you over here, or the motorcycle over there that just came out of nowhere. But at Nissan, we do have a choice. Every day, we choose to build every car with Nissan Intelligent Mobility. Inside the Rogue Sport, technology is designed around you, like blind spot warning. So when you try to change lanes and there's a car detected in your blind spot, back here on the left, or over here on the right, a light flashes, alerting you to stay in your lane and avoid any possible collisions. It's tech that's reinventing how you commute in California. But no matter how much technology we put in our cars, we'll always keep you in the driver's seat. Blind spot warning. Standard in the upgraded Nissan Rogue Sport, starting just under $22,000. Now the most exciting tech you own is in your driveway.
Automatic emergency braking cannot prevent all collisions and may not provide warning or braking in all conditions. Drivers should monitor traffic conditions and brake as needed to prevent collisions. See owner's manual for safety information. For well-qualified buyers, 21640 MSRP excludes tax, title, license, and destination charge. Dealer sets actual price.
Happy Hour is getting better at Napa Valley Wine Train, putting beer before Bordeaux and cans before corks. Hop Train Happy Hour is every Monday featuring local craft beers made with the same care as the region's finest wines and gourmet pub grub, all while enjoying a 2+ hour rail tour of Napa Valley on the open air car. Train departs at 5:45 p.m. Locals pay just $50. Limited offer. Get your tickets at winetrain.com using booking code LHNS.
Valid for Napa and Sonoma County residents. Restrictions apply.
Wherever you go,
here's who's coming to the Lincoln Theater in Yountville.
Saturday, June 23rd, Repin and the Russian Romantics. And the Lincoln Theater is delighted to partner with the Napa Valley Museum to present the Americana Series, a selection of concerts and other activities celebrating America's finest in music and cultural offerings. Friday, June 29th, it's Jamie Stone's Folklife. And Friday, July 6th, it's Billy Bob Thornton and the Boxmasters. Visit LincolnTheater.org for more info and to reserve your tickets.
Wherever you go, just tell your smart speaker to play KVON, the voice of Napa Valley.
And our time now is 8:34 on the KVON Morning Show for this Tuesday, June 19th. Looks like the losses on the Dow are moderating a little bit. Dow's off 310 points at this moment. That's 1.25 percentage points. It's been worse than that at different times this morning, down about 400 at one moment. Keeping an eye on that for you. And traffic, too. Nothing really popping on the traffic beat so far today. Not in the North Bay. We've been in a pretty good status all morning long in terms of traffic. So we'll hope that holds out for the next 25 minutes, and then I don't feel responsible for it any longer. In this segment, it's the first of our many candidate profiles for Napa City Council elections that are coming up in November. There are currently 6 people who have stated their intention to run for City Council. Many of those are actively fundraising and campaigning. It could be all 6 will still be on the ballot when November rolls around. There could be a 7th or an 8th because there's still time to do that paperwork and become an official candidate. That's a big field, and there are 2 seats open. One of those people who is running for to retain his seat is Peter Mott, who is our guest here in the studio in the first of our profile series, the only incumbent in the race. We've talked a little bit because of your 12 years on the council. There's more to talk about in the from the past and the accomplishments rather than just what would you do if you are elected, because right. You've got a track record, of course. Let's talk a little bit about the Civic Center project, the new City Hall, and all that's involved with that.
Sure.
Definitely, with my understanding of politics, this is not an issue you really want to have active during a campaign. It's a target for
challengers. Well, it's certainly a discussion point, isn't it? I don't know if I'd put it that way. Again, I'm not a campaign guy per se in terms of, you know, don't put this on the agenda or this on the agenda. I do this, every day as part of what I do for the community. So it's I look at all these issues of these sort of controversial issues as just ones that are a necessary part of the job. That being said, it's a tough one. We certainly, I can think of worse things. Again, I would be certainly much more concerned if we had to decide if what fire station we are going to brown out because, and so what part of the community you're not going to protect. You know, those are the issues that are harder for me and are bigger concern for me. You know, instead we built a new fire station finally after 12 years out in Browns Valley. So we're doing a better job of that. The first time in 10 years that we've been fully staffed in our police department in terms of our staffing. So there's a lot of good things that we're getting accomplished that I'm proud of in terms of what we do for the community. It's a challenging one in terms of getting people to understand the complexity of this project. And it's a very hard project to get across to people. I don't think we've done a good job up until this point communicating it very well. But that being said, this is a kind of a work in progress type of project until we get to the next phase, which is really where we get here's the final price point, and we move from there into real, not design, but into a different phase where we're moving towards construction documents, that type of stuff. So this process is called design, build, finance, operate, and maintain. DBFOM, DIBFOM. This is the first, and I'm in construction, this is the first DIBFOM project I've ever been involved in, which basically means, and the best way I can put this to you is it means, design build means, hey, you're gonna approve moving forward on. We did that about a year ago, where we decided we're going to keep it downtown, and we picked a team. That team's composed of four or five different companies, including the main company, which is Plenary, but also people who are doing the construction, people who are doing the maintenance. And the best way I can describe this to people is, imagine you're going to buy a house, but when you buy this house, you're going to buy it, and you're not just going to buy it from the seller. The seller's going to then come back and take care of that house for the next 30 years. And you're going to live in that house for 30 years. And 30 years from now, they're going to maintain it. They're going to keep it up. They're going to put a new roof on it in 20 years. They're going to put new carpeting in it. That's all part of the purchase price when you buy that house. And in 30 years from now, that house has to be at 85% of the quality when you bought it, when you sell it 30 years from now. So that's the process it's a good process as I've learned more about it and talked to more people, certainly in the bigger construction industry. I work a lot in San Francisco, where they say, imagine that is that 30 years from now, you don't have to worry about your HVAC system breaking down. And when you're talking about this size of, 130,000 square feet, this is a big, big building. It's a big, lot of square foot in there. So these systems are major systems that you want to make sure that some contractor doesn't come in and, here's your plans, but they don't quite build it to those plans. All of a sudden there's a leak in the air system or the IT systems don't work and they're tearing apart walls to get in there. So again, if you were to buy this house and it was to be maintained over those 30 years, and so everything's kept up over schedule, and then at the end of those 30 years, it's at this quality level. Well, that's what this program basically is. It's design build, and design build basically means that you keep tweaking it. We first started out with an architectural style, and then we changed that a little bit because it didn't quite work for some of us, and then we changed even a little bit more because it was kind of ridiculously expensive to bring that cost down. And then we added a fourth floor, and so we added 24,000 square feet after the original design. And the reason was we could actually do it without costing much more because we didn't have to raise the roof that much. And so to do that and still fit under the height limits we have downtown, that gives us this flexibility to either lease that space out for about $1 million a year and then be able to grow as the city grows over the next 30 years. So we've changed the garage a little bit. We've changed where the police parking is a little bit. So that's what the design build process is. This fall, we'll get a final price. And so that's the tough part of the team has. This team has to figure out, okay, here's the final price to build this and to maintain it over 30 years. And here you go. And so our goal then is to make sure that we have the ability to finance that without impacting what I talked about earlier in terms of where we finally got to after 12 years of building our economy. And so our long-term financial plan, which we work on every quarter, I think is very strong. And I think we have modeled it very well till we know where we're going to go. Again, they are design, build, finance, operate, maintain. They have to help us with the financial plan. They don't necessarily have to finance it, but they have to help us with that financial plan. That's part of the whole proposal. So I'm on a subcommittee now with the mayor where we are meeting every couple of weeks with the team and with our internal team so that we can share even more and we can work even more with the community to get them to understand the process and you know, the good, the bad, what can be different. You know, we need input. I met with the NPOA, the Napa Police Officers Association, yesterday to talk to get some input from them about, because they'll be actually in the building. They'll be, the police department won't have a separate building in the future. They'll be part of the city hall, at least as it stands now. And so operationally, how does that work for them? What works and what doesn't work? They have some concerns. How do we address those concerns? So it's involved. It's really hard to get your hands around. A lot of people will just hear, hey, it's $100 million. And but they don't, you know, you have to sit down and explain the financial model of what works to pay that $100 million over 30 years and why that cost may be a little bit higher. But how that, you know, when we get that kind of return to where that pays for itself. The downside of that, too, is that you got to recognize that we're really a point. This is my third city hall iteration since I started 12 years ago, two different times. They've said, hey, we should build a new city hall. Here we go. Because we're in seven different buildings, we lease four of them. We own three. They're all deteriorating. Our leases are going up or expiring. So just staying where we are doesn't make a lot of sense. It's costing us too much money to stay where we are, and it's not functional.
And unlike many communities, some, you know, half an hour's drive from where we are, the city of Napa being so attractive to developers currently downtown particularly, has an advantage in this whole financing picture. Can you describe how that is going to play out and why city of Napa has this advantage?
Right. So there's two parts to the city hall project. The first part is certainly, and we're doing them concurrently because it just makes sense in terms of that construction downtown and the impacts to the community. So the City Hall project itself is the City Hall Civic Center building. That's City Hall, and that's all the departments we have in the city will all be located in one building. The police department would also be currently is proposed to be within that building with their own secure parking off to the side. And then Fire Station 1 would be built behind there off of Clay Street. It would all be new construction. At the same time, once we would have to move into swing space, and that's a longer conversation, but then we probably have time for. But so we'd move into this space for two years. We're looking at that now, right now, where that might possibly be, and then they would during that process would be build City Hall, but they would also then they as part of the package. We sell the what we call the super block, which is where the police station and the whole block where the police station and the parking lot and the city hall is currently. We would sell that to this group for them to develop. So that's a separate project, but that's in the whole plan. They get developed then, and their proposal right now is currently 100 housing units and a hotel on there, and then some retail along First Street, including some downtown shopping, grocery shopping, which we're really looking forward to since Safeway went out. Yeah. So I've seen the initial plans for that. It should be out next month. It'll have the plans that are more developed. And so it's, again, it's one of those challenging things to see. It's not a big hotel. It's 165 rooms, but that's not a small hotel. And so that plan then adds to our long-term financial plan in terms of that revenue, both property tax-wise and sales tax-wise and TOT tax that help us that long-term financial plan with the other TOT will help us pay for City Hall.
And so the taxpayer, the citizen out there, the goal, I am assuming, then is to have all your city services continue to be funded. The money that's allocated to streets and road repair and everything continues, and you don't have a new tax on the local citizen to pay for a new city hall.
Exactly right. Not only that, but we're not impacting our CIP fund, our local projects that we have to do that, whether it's the roundabouts over on East Avenue that, you know, what a mess that is, mm-hmm. and the ones we're looking at Browns Valley, whether it's additional bridges that we have to do that we're putting in different places, you know, all those ongoing work that we have to do within the city, it doesn't affect that budget. It doesn't affect our reserve budget. That was the whole goal, is that, you know, we don't want to go into so much debt that we're leaving our kids with debt. We've always been very careful about the debt we carry in our city, and which has been none up to this point. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough model to look at to understand where, you know, there's we carry some debt for a little while, and then as again that financial plan really comes into play, you know, it starts absolutely taking care of itself, and then just keeps growing. Mm-hmm. So financially, it doesn't impact our community at all in terms of the taxpayers or you know, all the different things that we're working at, and we have a very robust, you know, capital improvement program.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the downside, the criticism might be that when you're trying to project out so long, a 20 or 30 year time span, and you're forecasting revenues, you don't know what's going to happen with the economy. Nobody really anticipated the big recession that started in 2007, 2008. And that did affect us. It didn't kill us, but it affected us here, right? How do you lay that out so that people can feel confident that over this long span, all that revenue will continue to come in?
And that's why I talked about the importance of having a really strong financial plan in terms of our reserves. So we have emergency reserves. We have operational reserves. You know, we have such a strong – I give actually the city manager Parnes a bad time because he has reserves of reserves sometimes. He's very fiscally conservative and has been over the years. And so we've been – which has been beneficial to us in that whether it's the last earthquake or the fires didn't impact the city as much, but it certainly knocked down our tourism a little bit for a few months. That still did not impact our ongoing budget because of our reserves that we have in place. So we have reserves to handle a downturn, to handle an emergency, whether it's an earthquake or what it would be. And again, this City Hall project would be built to such standards that it's designed to withstand the big one, unless it's the giant one, as long as it's just the big one and not the giant one, so that we're still operational even under a really significant event. That's the important thing, is that financially we're not going into this and saying we're just going to take on a whole bunch of debt and keep our fingers crossed. We're really going in and saying we have a good plan to finance this over the long term, and we can handle downturns in the economy, or we can handle natural disasters based on our current financial situation without having to say to really guess or to really take chances in the future. So I think we're in a really strong position. That's why it's a good time to do it, because again, we're in a really good position. The construction cost market's a little bit higher than maybe we would like, but things are only going to go up. So I think that's part of it.
I think it dovetails pretty well here to talk for a moment about this meeting on Friday that the city is sponsoring, hosting, right?
Correct.
At the Archer Hotel.
Yep.
Tell us a bit about that.
You have to remind me of what this one is, because I've been gone. This is the urban...
Yeah, right. It's the second in this pre-general plan
update
process, right?
Right.
And you have a collection of people, including the Bottle Rock guys, and you have...
Gordon Huther will be
Gordon
there.
Gordon Huther. And the idea is to talk about, you know, how planning and development is being done in other communities and how it might fit here. Is that the idea?
Right. And so, again, this is the pre-conversation prior to the general plan to really get more and more input. And there's going to be we talk about these meetings. There's going to be a number of meetings with the general plan implementation where we're going to go out to every single group out there that wants to have conversations. And even those that we don't, you know, we want you to come in kicking and screaming and take your Friday night off and say, hey, this is my opinion. This is what I care about my community. This is really the time where we spend time taking all that information in on a broad scope of areas that impact our city. From we'll get into the tougher ones, which are the traffic modeling and the housing and all that a little bit down the road. But right now we're talking about more sort of broader ideas about, you know, Bottle Rock and about, you know, we do a number. We just did the Jazz Festival down in the Oxbow Commons. You know, how much of that is important to this community? How much should we be promoting? How much, you know, I've always been a giant promoter of things that are free to the community. You know, I love Shakespeare in the Park because those who are visiting us can enjoy it, and those that are local can enjoy it, and it's absolutely free to everybody enjoy. So those are the things, you know, do we enhance the arts more? What do we need to do that? Do we in the last 5, 6, 8 years, you've seen a lot more public art in our community, where we've done a sculpture walk, where we now have the Railroad Arts District. And so we're trying to enhance that. We're trying to do more music. So things that people here can enjoy is, but you know, a lot of that is, you know, us, and I think the both the staff and the council saying, yeah, from those people we hear, this is what they like. This is the point where we're really trying to get a broader audience to say, hey, please come out and participate. We're going to try to reach out to you one way or another, through mail, through social media, through you know, phone calls, and through opportunities like this on Friday to come in and sit down. And hopefully it'll be larger than that, you know, group of 1,000-2,000 people that participate all the time. We're really trying to get out there and get to the 5,000-15,000 people in our community who maybe don't always participate, but try to convince them that this is a real time to speak up and have your voice heard.
Yeah, for sure. Urban Renaissance Napa 2040, that's the actual title of this event. Again, it's Friday, 2:30 to 7, Archer Hotel, First Street downtown, 15 local and national business and planning authorities at this forum. So this is not a decision-making meeting. The council's not voting on anything, but it's an opportunity to learn and hear about all the how people are thinking about
the right future. And what's going on. You know, even the first one, we even talked about subjects like, and it's funny how these things come up, driverless cars. You know, mm-hmm. in the next 20 years, driverless cars are going to be a reality. We have conversations these days about parking garages, right, and about roads, and people have, you know, real opinions about that now. Some of them are, you know, driverless cars are coming tomorrow. I don't think that's a reality, but we certainly are talking about that. That's going to change the urban landscape over the next 20 years. You don't need so many parking garages if we're sharing cars, you know, and how is that going to unfold, and what will be the impact on a community? Hopefully that'll impact traffic and it'll change the way we drive. You know, I'm looking forward to that. It's great to get that input and what people feel about that. Again, the same thing about, you know, a lot of our community really enjoy Bottle Rock. Those right next to it are challenged by it. Is that, you know, how do people feel about that in our community? Is it in the right spot? Should we be encouraging them to look at other places within the community? Our master planning of our parks, we're getting ready to do Garfield Park master plan. You know, how is that different these days as we change as a community in what's called the silver tsunami, or as we age, because we have fewer and fewer kids in our community? Part of that having to do with housing. But part of it's just demographics. You know, how does that change how we use our parks? And so all those are conversations we're going to want to have over this time. This one's about really that kind of urban feel, and bring in a lot of these artists, and bring in a lot of the promoters that do this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's just really important over the next 2 years to have, you know, input on a whole bunch of different ideas and different parts of our sort of thinking within our community that maybe we don't ask for all the time. Yeah. And maybe we don't, you know, really go out there and say, hey, how do you really feel about sculptures in your community? You know, I love the new sculpture at China Point Park. It's called a moon gate, but a lot of people call it the copper circle or the steel circle. But, you know, is that important to you?
Exactly. Last topic, about a couple minutes left. Tell us about Napa's new police chief starting soon.
Yeah, I actually haven't met the police chief yet. I just got back from vacation, so I'm excited to meet him. He's going to bring a real different perspective to our community. It's going to be a challenge replacing Steve Potter. You know, Steve grew up here, came up through the ranks, and so you know, I think Steve's around still and is going to be you know, one of these guys that can help in his retirement. But I know Steve's looking forward to moving along. And so our new chief is just going to be a kind of a little different flavor, and it's going to bring a little bit more of that that bigger city, you know, ability to address some of these situations. You know, we're not the small rural town, I think, that we were in terms of policing that we were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where, you know, people think about just cops walking around not doing anything. You know, there's we do have major crime in our community. We have challenges from homelessness to to some gang activity, even though it's pretty well suppressed right now. drugs and guns and all that are still, you know, things that we have to address. And so we want to be aware of that. You know, you never want to be sleeping at the wheel when it comes to paying attention to your community. And hopefully I think that our community, they don't see that, it's because we're doing a good job policing it and good job staying on top of it in terms of what they see day to day. But so there's a lot of change. We have a big change in our homeless plan in terms of how we're trying to address some of that. And a lot of this is integrated together. But I haven't had a chance to meet the new chief. I'm excited to do that and welcome his family. I know they're looking for a house right now. And so welcome his family here to our community. And I hope the rest of the community do that as well.
All right. Very good. We'll close it out on that note. Our guest, Peter Mott, incumbent city council member running for his seat once again in the upcoming fall election. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Barry. Appreciate it.
Kicking off our candidate profile series. And over the weeks to come, you'll hear all the other candidates here on the show as well. A break here as we go to the top of the hour, and that's going to do it for me for today. The KVON Morning Show all wrapped up for this Tuesday. Talk to you again tomorrow starting at 6 a.m.
Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Just 15 minutes across Jamison Canyon, hit Highway 80 North, and jump off on Sassoon Parkway. And there you will find a local staff ready to serve your every need with no pressure. It's a no-grind zone. The price you see is the price you pay. You can find Danny over in sales or Todd in commercial vans. Tim's your service manager. You got Chris. He's my new concierge. He hooked up all my Bluetooth stuff so I can listen to everything and actually watch. I figured out a trick. I can watch movies on either my phone or my tablet inside the Sprinter and put it through the sound system so I have big-time surround sound. It just works no matter what. Okay, it's new technology. It's the little things that impress me, as well as Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project, and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app. HomeAdvisor.
Housing discrimination. Would you recognize it and report it? These folks did.
My landlord said rent will be cheaper if we're friends with benefits.
Because I'm legally blind, a landlord questioned whether I'd be capable of maintaining an apartment.
Our real estate agent said a different neighborhood with people like us might better suit our family.
If you think you've been discriminated against, contact your local Fair Housing Center. Fair Housing is your right. Use it.
Call Fair Housing Napa Valley at 707-224-9720.
As parents, we teach our children to look both ways before crossing the street, always wear their seatbelt, and wear their helmets when riding a bike. Important lessons to keep them safe.
1440 KVON Napa. The voice of Napa Valley Sports is also your home for the San Jose Sharks.
During these tough economic times when many families are living paycheck to paycheck, it can be easy to lose sight of the importance of saving for the future. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to know there are some simple steps you can take to set aside dollars each month for retirement, college tuition, or unexpected expenses that could come your way. Most important is to review all your expenses and establish a monthly budget. Then examine every spending category and cut 10% from each. You can't reduce fixed expenses like rent or mortgage or a car payment, but you can easily cut back in many other areas like entertainment or using mass transit when possible instead of driving. And take a look at trying to bundle services such as your cell phone, land phone, cable TV, and internet service. For more tips and to speak with a certified credit counselor who